Here we go.
Welcome to Wall Street.
Yes.
The real place.
All right. What is up? Welcome back. This is the Daily Traders Podcast. I'm your host, Mark. This is my co-host, Jack. And we have a very special guest today, Chris Cady. Chris, thank you for coming on.
Mark and Jack, welcome to Wall Street. This is the place where it happens.
Yes, it is.
I know,
so, right? Chris, you've got a lifetime of experience trading. You've been trading for 45 years.
42 years? 43 years? Okay. Something like that, yeah.
And you started when you were very young.
Your age.
Okay. Nice. What was your introduction? What was the interest that got you into trading?
When you start on the exchange, you'll see tomorrow you're going to the floor. When you walk onto the floor, it's part NASA, part Vegas.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, and you're like, you have never ever seen a place. And at the time, it was filled with people, and it was the screaming people behaving in a way, screaming and tearing up paper, throwing it on the floor. The idea was that you didn't need a pedigree. Mm-hmm. Right? You just needed somebody to teach you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And once you had that introduction and you could admit you were wrong quickly, right? Because the idea was that things were changing so fast and nobody had the answer. The times that you were right were fewer than the times that you were right were fewer mm-hmm. than the times you were wrong. In other words, you're wrong more than you're right with mm-hmm. most anything, especially in trading, right? Totally. So the idea was that it helped that you were young. It helped that you didn't know.
Yeah.
Right? Because you would be like, oh, cool, I don't know. So whatever, I'll try again.
Yeah, and you don't have much to risk when you're young.
Right. And then the idea is that people would see that you were able to admit you were wrong. Mm-hmm. And then they liked that because they was like, ooh, that's somebody I could teach. Right? And because that knowledge got handed down from generation to generation, generation to generation, mm-hmm. Which is where you guys are picking up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is excellent.
Quick disclaimer, we are not financial advisors. We cannot give any financial advice. Have to say it for the lawyers. Nothing we say in this episode should be taken as financial advice. The full disclaimers will be in the description below. All right. Thanks. So, yeah, we were talking about how, like, kind of you're passing the torch to us in a way with your knowledge and experience.
Yeah, and we were just talking to other guys who just saw you and came in. What'd they say, right? They were...
What was it?
With Eddie, we were talking...
Oh, Eddie. Yeah.
For people who are watching, Eddie runs a venture capital firm, and he was very pleased to have met gentlemen, young men, who were getting after it.
That's a good word to use, getting after it. He picked my brain for a bit. And then he's like, yeah, they're legit. And I learned a bunch from him talking too.
Right. He's cool. It's just like surrounding yourself with people like that. I mean, he was talking about why he works in New York City. Because it's not about the weather or the traffic sucks. I mean, it took mm-hmm. us about an hour to find parking here. Mm-hmm. But he was like, it's surrounding yourself with people that, like, you see this guy, you know, just did 10 times more income than you that day, or they're wildly successful. It motivates you being around these type of people.
I saw a transition in you guys just from the 10 minutes that you talked to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? There's a total tough love thing that is both caring, and you all have to own your own behavior. Mm-hmm. There's an accountability that comes with this place.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Right. And so you can make millions, billions, mm-hmm. but most people don't. Mm-hmm. Right. So think about that. 80% of people lose everything. Everybody who's watching, understand that that's the cool part, that 80% of the people lose everything. But that means that if you're part of the 10% who make all the money, that the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
So what would be the first thing that we would want to tell people? When you know that you don't know, you get out, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Because since 80% of the people who lose everything, then you could say 80% of the trades I make, probably not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So what's that? So we were saying practice with your girlfriend. I'm wrong. Just practice, everybody. Practice with anybody you can. I'm wrong. Just practice, I'm wrong. So that we can come back and try again tomorrow.
Because, yeah, if you're wrong, that means you're not right, correct? Right, so it's like if you're clear, it's more embarrassing, it's more admirable to admit you're wrong than it is to stick to a losing position, to put it in trading terms.
If you're arguing with somebody who's arguing a stupid position just in a regular discussion, mm-hmm. you're like, why would you defend such a stupid position?
Yeah.
You were like, that's stupid, mm-hmm. right? And so the same thing in here. And so it's a quick transition to try and understand that being wrong first, fastest,
yeah,
is the coolest thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Everybody's so tweaked on being right.
No one, mm-hmm. yeah, no one wants to be wrong. It's hard mm-hmm. to admit you're wrong.
Right. And so remember what Eddie said? He's like, when you are tomorrow, big day, mm-hmm. right, and people are going to ask you questions. And if you don't know, what did Eddie say, right?
Maybe you're wrong.
Or not, I don't know.
Yeah, right? So tomorrow we're going on the New York Stock Exchange. We're going on the floor.
Of the New York Stock Exchange. Right? The New York Stock Exchange, where it's a very NASA meets Vegas.
Can you explain that analogy? NASA meets Vegas.
It's a speculative. It's the if you're a surfer, it would be the impact zone of all the money in the world mm-hmm. comes through that floor. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like before the news hits the news wires, the prices change.
Yeah.
Right. Because people are spending money who know the news.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's the bleeding edge of today's reality, and you're there. You're surfing that wave.
Yeah.
Right? That's the spot.
It's interesting. So, like, what is the job for people who may not know of a trader who's on the floor, who's a New York Stock Exchange trader?
The job is to make money, mm-hmm. right? Or not lose, right? Mm-hmm. As we were saying, right? Yeah. The first job is to admit you're wrong fast. Mm-hmm. And then the stock exchange is for people who are new at the game. It's like a giant ice cream parlor with a billion different flavors of ice cream, and you have to pick the right flavor ice cream. Mm-hmm. Right? There's think of all the companies, right?
Apple, oh my gosh,
right? Billions,
and all the different ways to trade.
Right. And so when you're trading futures or commodities, there's just one crude oil pit, and there's one wheat pit, and there's orange juice and all those other things. Mm-hmm. So the part of the game on the stock exchange is you have to like the company, or you have to know the company. You have to choose the company.
Yeah,
that's kind of strange, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have to actually choose where to get on and off the roller coaster.
So people on the floor, the traders on the floor, they have a huge edge.
They used to.
Okay.
Right, because when I was on the floor, right? Yeah, yeah, people would come up to me at a party and be like, "You see things."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were like, "What do you see?" And I was, mm-hmm. Of course, because you see all the orders because they had to come through the exchange.
Yeah.
Right. And so you got to know who was doing what at what price.
Oh, that's huge.
Isn't that huge?
Yeah.
But now with electronic trading, everybody leaves a footprint. You don't know exactly who it is. Mm-hmm. Right. But we see the large prints. So it's different in that regard. So what was great about the floor when there were people, and you'll meet some of them tomorrow who were there before it went all electronic, is that, it's like, oh, Jack represents, Norway's sovereign wealth fund. Mm-hmm. Right. And Mark represents Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, watch those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. Because now if you say, oh my gosh, this guy, Mark's scooping up millions and millions of dollars of shares.
Yeah.
Where, these are the big players, which honestly, I think kind of ties us in. Like, what happened today? You were talking, we came to the office and said today was, I didn't even know this is a crazy fact, today was the third largest move.
Intraday move in history.
That's insane. It was like 7%.
Yeah. So a lot of people got destroyed.
Oh my gosh.
Right. I mean, no one ever bets that something that's never happened. Right, how do you bet on the end of the world? It's a bad bet, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how do you bet that something that's never happened is going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, people be like, are you nuts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Yet today was one of those days, right? And so, mm-hmm. For people who are watching at a later time, what happened today was the CPI release, and it was a little bit worse than expected, and the market opened down 3% and then rallied to close up 3% plus something like that, right?
Yeah.
And so, but it was pure panic. And so what's interesting is that the marketplace doesn't have enough supply on the top of the book to satisfy large players, mm-hmm. such as the Norwegian fund or Goldman, who both of you represent Norway and Goldman Sachs. And so that's what happened. It was pure panic. Mm-hmm. And after that, the damage is done. People are scared. There's been obviously a lot of trauma in the market, and so you can't blame people for being throwing their hands up and saying this is dangerous, mm-hmm. or this is scary.
So on like a behind the scenes kind of
perspective. I mean, the actors, right?
Yeah, who are the actors in this market?
Who
are the actors?
Who would you think?
Who
has the ability to move them up that much?
Governments.
Probably, right? Central banks.
Yeah, funds, yep. Right? Huge funds, Goldman Sachs. Right.
And then think about this, right? The end of the year is the finish line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So is this the beginning of the race to the end of the year? Mm-hmm. Right? Is this the right? If you're going to make your year, if you're a fund manager, everybody's down.
Yeah.
30%. It's like there's a lot of pressure. Career risk is what we call it. Mm-hmm. Right? As a manager, you've got career risk, and so you know it's the last six gates of the course.
Okay.
Right.
I like the racing analogy.
Are you going to pin it to the gate? Are you going to stick with your line?
Right.
You might get laid behind and crash before the finish line.
Or is the guy going too fast? Is going too straight? Is he going to blow up?
You're getting after it. I liked your earlier term, getting after it. I use that a lot in high school. My friends made it a joke, but still very usable. Like, you got to get after it.
Ski racing.
Yeah. Talk about, actually, you could mention ski racing and how, Jack, you really made your connection with Chris, like, not solely off of ski racing.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. Like, we were back there the other day, and my friend who we brought with us, he goes, how do you know this guy, Chris? I was like, a Twitter DM. I DM'd you on, I saw you on a different podcast, and I really liked what you're saying. And this is when we first started the Rumford group, which we've talked about. And
we'll talk about more.
Yeah, yeah, we will talk about more later in the episode. And then I just kind of picking out, I mean, I DM'd probably a couple hundred people on Twitter. And a lot of guys weren't interested. Some guys were, and some guys actually responded. They were interested, but I was like, okay, maybe these guys aren't a good fit. And you responded, and we had a phone call. I was finished up the golf course, picked up the phone, and we talked about ski racing and windsurfing.
Yeah,
we didn't. I don't even think we talked about trading.
You know, Betsy Pratt, who ran Mad River, said it's not the mountain's job to make sure you have a good time. And right, the markets.
That's true, yeah. Right? Oh my God.
It's not the market's job to make sure that you have a good time. Or as a more intelligent, as my person might say, we're competing against an inanimate object. In other words, when we go windsurfing or skiing, the mountain doesn't care about us.
Yeah.
When we go trading, or when in the ocean, doesn't care about us. Mm-hmm. But when we are, and when we are trading, the market doesn't care about us. So our brains can actually make no distinction. We can actually think of trading as like skiing or windsurfing or winging it.
Yeah.
As you're doing it. Right? Yeah. Think about that, right? So we don't even need to go on vacation every day. If you're trading, it's just like ski racing.
I like that.
Yeah.
The analogies are good, and you use a lot of analogies, and it really helps to understand certain topics. And like I said, working with you, let's talk about the Rumford group, what we're creating, because that's how I've learned a lot through you, through these analogies, so we can tie it in.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. It's a skill. When I was taught, when I was your age, by Walter Franks, chairman of New York Stock Exchange, right?
Yeah.
And remember, we were talking about that deal when you first show up on the floor of the exchange. Mm-hmm. Their deal was they put up the money if they liked you, right?
Like and how old were you when they would put up the money for you?
19.
And how much money were they giving you?
$10,000 to start.
Okay. So these guys were just winning $10,000 for some 19-year-old. And back then, that was a lot more money.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And so they said if you lose half, if you lose all of it, you're gone. And you get half.
Yeah.
Right? You get half. And so, and then they obviously had an interest in teaching you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and you'll see that tomorrow, right? When you meet the older guys down there, they'll have an interest in teaching you, just like Eddie did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that is I'm just one of the long chain of it's sort of a historical precedent that people on the exchange were more interested in teaching people, younger people, how this works, rather than building condo complexes, is what they told me.
Wow. Right? Okay. Yeah.
And so it's very similar to what we see in the Eskimo and Indian tribes, where the elders passed down the knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so when the exchange closed up shop and went virtual, they completely blew that knowledge pool.
Wow.
But that's still there. And so what you're doing is you're actually trying to capture the knowledge pool that they threw away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's more, trading is more than just one trading strategy, or which, because with social media, trading has kind of been construed into you just need one strategy and like one indicator and then you're good. But it's more than that. It's like there's so much knowledge inside this whole industry. And what you were talking about, how all the money in the world has to flow through the market. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Sure. It's all at different time frames too, right? Think about it, right? There's long-term actors and short-term actors and then microsecond actors. And so when we're trading, we have to integrate the, in other words, we need to know what the actors are thinking and what they want.
Yeah.
Right? So the we need to be in step with the longer term actors, the medium term actors, the shorter term actors, or if we're fighting them, we need to know that we're going to have a shorter duration to our trades.
Yeah.
Right? Because we don't have the ability to move the needle like a big Goldman Sachs does.
Yeah.
Right, we're not that. We're not yet. Anyway, we're not Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, not yet.
Right, and so just knowing where we fit in the food chain is an important part about trading.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like you can't. You're not in control.
So as traders, we're essentially just bystanders.
No, we're dancing with the market. We're riding the wave. We're skiing with the. Remember how we're supposed to ski with the mountain, not against it.
Or even like when you're surfing, if it's breaking left and you turn right, you're going to get taken out by the white water.
Right. I mean, so we dance with the girl that brought us.
Yeah.
In the market is the girl that brought us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I had friends. Mike Wagner used to say, "You're an artist, and you don't know if you're going to get watercolor, clay, charcoal." Like, it's our job to make art out of what they give us.
Mm-hmm. So is it the skill of figuring out what they're giving us, or is it the skill of figuring out how to use what they're giving us, speaking metaphorically?
Yeah. And it's also the skill of, can you do what they're giving us?
Mm-hmm.
Part of building that flexibility is, remember, we're talking about being able to say we're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because the game changes, and there's so many things happening outside of what we can see or control. Mm-hmm. So it's the first line of defense is, I don't know, which means I'm gone out of the trade. And then there are times, though, when you see it happening. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen it, right? Right? You're in step and you're like, oh my God, I got this.
Yeah, it's like a magical feeling.
Yeah, cool?
Some days I step into the market and I feel like I have a pulse on it. And then the other days I'm here, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I have no sense of or feeling of any type of direction. But then other days I'm in front of my computers, I'm like, okay, I got this.
I think athletes have the same sort of thing where they train and train and train and train, and then their form disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And then so for us is like, I think the distinction is that when we don't know, we have to say to ourselves, hey, I don't know.
Because you're going to get screwed if you try to dance with a different girl that brought you, or if you don't know and you actually try to trade on the assumption that you do know. Because you don't know. And then it's just a guess at that point.
Right. And then so you could get lucky.
Yeah, you could get lucky.
But and then you'd be like, oh, you know, I know it. And then, no, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is first is know, you know, it's the cliche, right? Like, know what table. Like, there's a $5 table in Vegas. There's a $50 table in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
There's a $500 table in Vegas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? If you don't know, you play the $5 table.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And then my friend Dave Stone, he had five kids and five dogs, a huge trader. Mm-hmm. We're all sitting right across from the CME, right about 100 feet to our left, mm-hmm. up here in New York City. And so Dave would say, when you're cold, trade small and active.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting, because most people are like, when you're cold, stop.
Yeah.
And Dave was the other way. He would say, no, just trade as small as you can, one share, 10 shares, mm-hmm. whatever. And just be active so you can get yourself back in step.
Interesting.
I like that.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It encourages participation.
Yeah.
Right? And like, I mean, we're here on the planet. We have X amount of minutes. Might as well participate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, I want to kind of continue on with your story. So how long were you on the exchange for?
Oh, from August of 1980 until it closed, which was pre-COVID.
Okay.
2017.
So you were on the floor, like standing on the floor?
Oh, I didn't know you were trading on the floor up till a couple years ago.
Yeah, we all were.
How does that even, like, I mean, this might, I'm just curious, because I see all the guys, they like, some of them have like iPads. How do you even buy and sell on the floor? Because it's not as simple as,
right, it's all rounded through this.
I drag my mouse to the buy button. How are you buying on the floor?
Same sort of thing. We have the same front ends that you have.
Okay, you have like an iPad and you just buy?
Yeah. And little, even smaller handhelds.
Oh,
but it was actually done on the floor. It was actually done open outcry. Like, I looked and said, sold.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, oh, because for every obviously for every buyer, there's a seller.
Right.
So the guy to the left of you could be the buyer.
Right.
Or it could be the seller.
Right. So, I mean, you need to trade with somebody.
That's like, so interesting.
Wow.
Right, so, there is somebody on the other side of your trade when you hit the mouse.
Mm-hmm. That's so crazy. Were you ever like, did you ever like sell to someone and like the market just rocketed it up and like you knew that they just lost money or all vice versa?
All the time.
Do fights ever break out on the exchange? Like it must get personal to some degree.
No, it doesn't get that personal. I mean, they're your competitors and they're your friends. And there was a professional courtesy. Like ski racing.
Yeah.
You're standing in the start gate.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wish somebody a bad run.
No.
Right? And same in surfing. I'm sure those guys are just like, you know, you go for the best you can and that's the way it goes. And probably in a bike race too, right? You see those guys in the Tour de France. They're all friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And so in trading, yeah, if someone was blatantly an asshole,
mm-hmm.
then yes, people, there were grudges.
Interesting.
But if someone was sketchy, word got around,
mm-hmm.
and no one would trade with them.
So when you're on the floor and you're, let's say you're putting up an order, do you choose who you don't choose?
Yes,
who
you can.
You choose who you sell to.
You can.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. Everybody wanted to buy them, everybody wanted to buy them, and your friend wanted to buy them too,
mm-hmm.
your friend got them.
Oh.
Some of the cool brokers would break them up, which was very nice, right?
Like,
I'm not as big as Goldman. He'd give, you know, me a little bit and Goldman a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
and then his friends, you know, correspondingly. So brokers were very judicious in that regard.
That's so interesting.
Wait, so you were trading your own account?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. And did you have to, so you rented out a seat?
I owned my seats.
You owned your seat.
Yeah, you made enough money to buy the seats.
Okay.
So it's like real estate.
Yeah, it was very similar to real estate because on the floor you had a spot in the pit when you saw all those guys standing in the pits when I was trading futures in the S&Ps and here across the street at the CME. And the stock exchange was much different, of course, right? That was all these different stocks. So, for example, where you trade IBM is different than where you, for example, would trade Ford. Or something like that, right? So you'd have to go to that little area where they traded IBM because you couldn't buy IBM on that piece of the exchange when you're trading Ford, who's located over there.
That's interesting. So how did you sell your seat? Or do you still own it?
I still have my seats.
Really?
Yeah. And so, but they're of no use
mm-hmm.
because we are now trading electronically.
Mm-hmm. So there really is no edge to being on the floor anymore.
No, there is no floor. I mean, we're going to
we're
the floor.
We're talking about the like original like floor.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But tomorrow when we go to the floor, those guys are executing on iPads, which are routed to the same computers that we're routed to.
Yeah. Now it's all digital, obviously.
Right. What's good there, though, is that they have the same sort of thing where they can talk to the guy from Norwegian Wealth Fund. It can also talk to Goldman's guy. They're all friends. And so they're how much is exchanged in regards to news? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And inside information? I don't know. We can ask tomorrow.
Yeah,
but I would suspect that for people who are watching, I would suspect that the market moves so quickly now that the information gleaned from the exchange floor, probably not relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Or just color, right?
Yeah.
Like who just did that?
Yeah.
Kind of thing, right? Like you won't get the answer as to why.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about kind of your trading strategy, like, and broad overview?
Yeah, sure. Don't blow up. don't blow up. Come back tomorrow. Right? I was taught by Victor Sparando. He's like, there are days when they hand out $1,000 bills.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be there for those days, right?
Yeah.
And so my strategy, of course, the markets have evolved.
Mm-hmm.
So the strategies have changed, right? Like we were talking about it. Remember before the internet how things had a horizontal distribution because the guy in the lumber yard would buy more lumber when the lumber got cheap and then let the lumber run light when it got expensive, right?
Yeah.
And so now it's more of a momentum game.
Yep.
Right? Is she calling me back? Is the record going viral?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Are you getting enough likes?
Yeah.
Right? The market's the same thing. And so how do you want to, you know, what, how would you measure likes? Mm-hmm. Are you getting as many likes in the same amount of time, or are you slowing down mm-hmm. in your adoption? Is the record picking up listens, or is it losing listens? Mm-hmm. Right? It's still going up. Say, instead of 1 million listens a day, it's only getting 500,000, and then it's only getting 250,000, right?
Yeah.
Or is it getting 50, then 100, then 300, then 1,000, right?
You're trying to gauge the momentum.
Right. Right. Speed through time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. Speed through time.
So it's that whole horizontal to vertical.
Well, right. How, you know, we're skiing, right? And it's like, oh, you can feel yourself slowing down. You didn't wax right, right on a sling, on a spring day.
Yeah,
and you're like hitting the. Right? That would be something losing speed through time, right? And that's so that's what trading has become. Mm-hmm. Is you're measuring the speed through time. So there are many ways to do that, you know. And at what time frame do you want to do that? Mm-hmm. For example, today at the lows, the market was lower in price, but on less momentum. It was slowing down.
Okay, it's interesting. So how did you trade? Did you trade at all today?
Yeah.
So how did you trade this market? Today?
Today was I've never seen anything like today. Mm-hmm. I've never seen such pure panic to the upside, ever.
Wow.
Interesting. And I've been here forever. I saw everything I've seen. And I've never seen anything like today. It was the market had been down for 6 days.
Yep.
So if you were short, you would have said prudent time to cover down 6 days before a big number, right? So the buyers today were brand new buyers opportunistically using the momentum, not justifying the lower prices.
Okay.
Okay. And mixed in with the fact that the midterms demand higher prices from the Democratic Party to win.
Yeah.
Right? They want the every story has a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
That's what they want.
Yeah. So, I mean, you said so, panic to the upside. And normally when I hear panic, I think of bad, right? And when I think of bad, I think of down. Mm-hmm. So how is someone panicking to the upside?
Well, there's many metrics to measure, you know, what, like in trading, location is like real estate location.
Yep.
So if you are a buyer, you generally want to buy cheap.
Yeah.
Right. And only buy expensive. Like, when do you like to buy something that's expensive? Not often, right?
No.
And so in trading, it's like, ooh, this is not good. You know, but people were buying size, expensive relative to today's price action. They were paying way up, given that the trend was lower, right? Mm-hmm. The trend is the background. Remember, we're talking about the background.
Yeah.
Background is negative.
The longer period.
Right. For everybody who's watching at a later date, the market had been down 6 days in a row and opened on a 52-week low this morning. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was that there was less momentum to the downside. What's creating a divergence.
Yeah.
Right? In other words, something's not right here, right?
Yep.
The price is lower than the momentum says it should be, which implies to people that it's
oversold.
Cheap. Yeah, oversold, cheap, right? And so they came for them so hard. And so perhaps it's the beginning of the end of the race to the end of the beginning of the race to the end of the year, because every money manager is P&L to the end of the year. And then, as we were saying, the midterms, and who knows what other actors are out there.
Yeah, because as a trader, anyone trading in a marketplace, it's important to know who you're playing against, right? So it's like thinking about, okay, who am I playing on? And the people who are, you know, the people moving the market aren't retail traders sitting at their desk in their room. It's like we said, it's these countries, it's funds, it's big central banks.
And I mean, guys who've got career risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, successful social behavior is contagious. Mm-hmm. So this guy bought him and he's making money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So follow him.
Right.
Go on the train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get on the train. Right. It's not, why'd you buy him? Price is going up, right? It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But it's certainly effective. You know, they would call it in behavioral economics, right? We can spin it like the price behavior of a particular asset class is its best marketing tool for more money to be allocated to it.
That's interesting, yeah.
Right? And that's a very sophisticated way of saying, why'd you buy it? The price is going up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to touch on the Brumford Group, or we can talk about it for a minute, because your knowledge, your trading strategy system, however you'd like to define it, we're actually putting that into a format where people are going to be able to watch and learn.
Good.
And see exactly how you've been able to have success and still are trading every day.
Yeah.
It's like the fact that you're doing this with us is crazy. And so Jack and I noticed there's like this huge gap between like the free information on YouTube, the courses, and then the proprietary knowledge and information. Guys like you who have been trading their whole lives, no one has access to that. And so we're partnering with you along with other traders, and we're going to continue adding to this, I like to call collective of individuals, and creating this bank of information where anyone can go who really wants to learn how to trade.
Yeah, my teachers were Peter Stottlemyre. He's the guy who created Market Profile.
Yeah.
And then and Victor Sprandio, Trader Vic, he's in Market Wizards.
Yeah.
And Walter Frank, chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, the guy mm-hmm. who was like, here, give you 10 grand.
Yeah.
And so those guys are not available
no.
to teach, right? And so, but they taught me. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that, and so you are in a sense picking up the ball where the exchange dropped the ball.
Yeah, because no one's doing that anymore. The exchange isn't bringing young guys on the floor and giving them money to trade.
Nothing makes us happier to see me 40 years junior, yeah. right, hungry. And even Eddie, who was the venture capital guy, was very happy to see the same sort of thing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you'll find that you get a warm welcome. It may not necessarily, it'll be tough love. Mm-hmm. Right? Remember, don't ask the same question twice.
Yeah.
Right? But to everybody watching, the knowledge that the guys are putting together it's not a black box thing. It's real economic auction theories, how markets work. Mm-hmm. There's no secret sauce. You have to do the work. You have to understand it. And then everybody else will have a chance to build a system which suits their time frame. Remember, everybody's got a different time frame.
Yeah.
So some people can't watch the screen all the time, so they have to back out to a longer time frame. But the same principles that the guys are putting together here work on all time frames, from the microsecond out to the weekly and monthly time frames. Mm-hmm. So it's a really excellent, and you have a brilliant idea to collect the knowledge from you're kind of archivists.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and so tomorrow we meet a bunch of guys on the trading floor who probably certainly had four or five generations of the same family
yeah.
handing down knowledge to them.
Yeah.
So that will be a good prospecting trip.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Me too.
It's cool. We're giving anyone, like, no matter where you're from, and Rumford is the small town in Maine, right? Mm-hmm. I think the name, you know, the Rumford Group just means, and it shows that, like, anyone from a small town in the middle of nowhere, no matter who you are, you can learn how to trade if you have the right direction and you have the right teachers.
And trading is such a great industry because the barrier to entry is minimum. All you need is a computer, a Wi-Fi connection, and a little bit of capital.
Well, you need a good teacher.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, that's the one thing that people are missing, is they need a good teacher, because without a good teacher, training is so complex. And, you know, like you've said many times, you're playing against the smartest people in the world,
right?
Who don't care, and they're just all they want to do is take your money.
But you can win the lottery,
exactly.
Right? I mean, if you're good at admitting you're wrong and you're curious, and then what about ski racing? Grit.
Yeah.
It's messy.
Yeah.
But we keep coming back.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You know, you cartwheel, you hit a panel gate backwards in a Super G, and you cartwheel seven times, you put your stuff back on, you're like, I'm not going to do that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And same thing in trading, right? Like you just change your technique.
Yeah.
Where somebody who's checkboxed their way through life is going to think, you know, I know the right way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
The market eats those people for lunch.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So it's actually, being from Rumford mm-hmm. is actually an advantage mm-hmm. to you that we say you have excellent transitional coping skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? The ability to deal with change, where somebody who comes from a pedigreed background has more of a problem because they think that they know, because they went to the best school. They went to Choate, then they went to Yale, then they went to MIT, and then they went to the Harvard School of Business.
Did you go to college?
No, never went.
Really?
Yeah.
So did you always know that you didn't want to go to college, or you were...
I got a job on the floor.
How did you get a job on the floor? Was it like a personal connection? Did you reach out?
My stepbrother came from Chicago and had me as a summer intern. We got into a big argument. And then I went to the chairman of the exchange, who had not as an appeal, but he had his own company. Mm-hmm. And I volunteered my services as a clerk. And after 2 weeks, I said, "Are you aware I'm not getting paid?" He said, "How much do you need?" And the going paycheck was $250 a week. So that, and you could live here on $250 a week.
Yeah, how's that? Right? Yeah, wow.
Wow, right? It's like my rent was $250 a month. Wow. And 2.5 years later, I had 29 employees, was a member of the exchange, my trading account.
Wow. You had 29 employees?
Yeah, working underneath me.
Wow.
So these guys were traders working for you?
You know, young people.
Really?
Yeah. That's clerks, other brokers, things like that. Mm-hmm. And we were running a brokerage as well as trading operation. He was chairman of the exchange. He had a big business.
Yeah.
Specialist firm.
So were you trading with all in-house money, so all your own capital? Were you taking in investors?
No, it was all in-house capital. Mm-hmm. We're executing individual orders for separate customers.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so that was the way business was done. You could trade for yourself, and then you could also execute customer business. You couldn't execute an order for yourself in front of a big customer order, right? That would be kind of like bogarting. Right? So that was, you know, there were rules. Mm-hmm. There were rules. And so, but yeah, that's the story. And then the reason Walter and Frank was like, "You can go to college, we'll pay, but I would suggest you stay here and learn from the people on the job. They're smarter."
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, do you think people need college? Obviously,
that you can get a job at Goldman, or you can get a job at Apple, or you can get a job anywhere if you go to college, right? Because, I mean, or that was in my case, maybe less now, because I think non-traditional backgrounds are enjoying a bit of a renaissance. People are recognizing that if you have a non-traditional background, anybody out there, that you're worth something. Ski racers.
Yeah.
Because why? Transitional coping skills. Right? They want you to be able to say, "I'll change."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes it's like a fresh slate. Like if you haven't gone to college, you don't have that knowledge, it's kind of a good thing in a way, because you can be taught maybe the right way in one case or another.
Or you're more receptive.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good way.
To learning on the job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you don't have much other opportunities.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do? Go to college for 4 years and try and get a job here again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So yes, and especially since you're not going to college, you're younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So that gives you leg up on all the people who are going off to college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're way senior by the time they get out of college.
Yeah, you're years ahead. And I think if you put yourself in a position where, like, you can't fail, there's no other option, you'll make it work.
That was me.
Yeah.
That was me. I mean, it was the exchange. I was a member.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was crazy.
Yeah, it is. Story, it's an awesome story.
Yeah, so after you had people working under you, you were trading capital along with acting as a broker for other people, where'd you go from there? Because obviously now you're in New York. And
right. It was, I stayed in New York. I was working for Walter, but it got so busy with 29 people and doing all the business. Mm-hmm. And I was more interested in the knowledge. And so this guy, Victor Sprandio, a Trader Vic, he wrote a book called Trader Vic, brilliant trader, Market Wizards, offered me a job. And the deal was no salary, half of what you make, unlimited.
Unlimited.
Unlimited capital to trade.
Unlimited capital to trade.
Wow.
Really?
Right.
And that's what you're doing?
I did that for 2 years.
Okay.
No, I left right before the 87 crash with him. And then I've traded on my own since then.
Wow.
So do you just rent this office space up here? Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. We had the exchange right across the way. Mm-hmm. And everybody scattered, which is why you're picking up the ball that the exchange dropped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's some huge silver traders, and we'll get them, some of the biggest in the world are right here in this floor.
Really?
Yeah. and some very huge crude traders as well, who were all across the way. And they all said, we should work together just so that none of us go down the rabbit hole. In other words, if you say something to me and I'm like, I don't want to say you're wrong, I'd say something like, maybe you should rethink that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's, we want to be able to look at somebody and say, what do you think about this idea? Right? The floor was good like that, right?
Yeah.
So because your friends who were your competitors knew enough not to, because you need the ego strength to hit the mouse. You don't want somebody to say you're wrong, stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? But you say something like, maybe you should rethink that. Or think about it. Have you thought about thinking about it this way?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that was cultivated. Another thing that you'll see as you talk to all the people from the floors, that was cultivated as a way to keep your ego strength. You need the ego strength to say, I think, and hit the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then as soon as you hit the mouse, you need to be able to say, I don't know. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
See that transition there?
Yeah.
And so part of the curation of making the trade, especially when it was a low probability trade, was that you wanted to bang it off of people who were in the same industry. Okay. You're not looking for an accomplice. Mm-hmm. You're almost looking for a critique of your concept. And then everybody from over, right, literally across the street came over here to rent space. I just like the window.
Yeah.
It's a great view. Everybody come. If you're ever in New York, I'll buy you a beer.
I love it.
I'd be careful with that one. You're going to be getting
that's a quite all right.
Yeah.
Only like three people have shown up so far.
Yeah, it's funny.
I love how you're so passionate about, you know, teaching.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's really cool to, because you own it.
Yeah.
It's so cool. Like to see people understand and then own it, and then it's a high wire act to survive here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's like we were talking about that with the guy we were just talking to,
Eddie.
Can't believe I spaced out his name, Eddie. How it's like you go down there and it's like people. It's just like a bloodbath. It's like it's people are taking other people's, because that's what it is. Like when you're trading, you're taking the money from someone else.
Well, yeah, it's very gladiator in concept, but it's dressed up where, you know, tomorrow we'll be wearing a suit, and it's not necessarily the person directly in front of you taking your money, right? They could be representing, but we try not to look at it that way. We try and look at it as though we're competing against the smartest people in the world.
Yeah.
Because they're not out for you. Mm-hmm. Nobody's out for you.
Yeah.
Right? It's only you making your own mistake is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we're skiing with the mountain.
Yeah.
Not against it.
Yep.
Is it wrong to say like trading's like probably the most competitive sport?
That's a very super, right, game sport, right?
Yeah.
Is golf a game or sport, right? I mean, that it's interesting to ask professional golfers that question.
Yeah.
If you ever get what professional golfer is, okay. You know, is it a game or sport? It's, well, there's no physical injuries. Here, right? So I guess we could say it's not a sport.
Probably a game.
But from the mental perspective, it's the same as you're standing on the top of a big cliff that you've never dropped.
Yeah.
And do you feel up to it?
Yeah.
You know, is it the $5 table, the $50 table, $500 table?
I've heard, I've listened to a ton of podcasts with big traders, and this one guy named Lance, he talked about how in his trading that he has different classes. He has an A class trade, a B class trade, and a C class trade. And he might even say, I'm not even going to take a C class trade, but a B class trade, I'll put on, for example, $5,000. But then when I see an A trade come up, I'll put on $25,000. So it's kind of like when you were talking about how like when you're cold, did we talk about that on the pod? Mm-hmm. Well, like when you're cold, you just trade and be involved. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
When you're cold, being involved in trading small size, but then when you see that good setup and you're confident in your theory of like why, you know, this, the analysis and the theory behind the trade, it's you actually have to size accordingly and take, because some days, like, you're right, like the market does print $1,000 bills
for free, right?
Exactly.
It will give you money for free. The guy's Griffin, I think he runs Citadel, says the key to his success at Citadel is having more on when he's right. Right, instead of calling it A, B, and C, we have to know ourselves when we see it, right? We're talking about when we see the trade, like you're in step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And so So making sure that you have enough, you come to the table, you come to the mouse with enough rest to know that you have to act when you're right.
Yeah.
And it's almost for just like a finger snap, mm-hmm. right? You don't have that time to be like, I know I'm right and I have 5 minutes to think about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's the, you know, if you're really right, you only have a finger snap to do it. It's kind of crazy like that.
Yeah.
And just in trading in general, you just can't second guess yourself.
No, you don't want a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. Mm-hmm. Ever.
Do you think for people starting out trading, they need, because it's like, when I find I like kind of half ass it, I don't do well. I lose money. I find I only make money trading when I'm like fully committed. I'm in front of the markets. I have a trading strategy that I'm committed to.
Right. Well, let's just say you need to be in a curious mindset.
Yeah.
Right. I have a picture of the cat to remind me. He's like looking at me and is like, "What is that?" Right. Like,
just like that.
Right. To remind yourself to be curious.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Is that your cat?
Yeah, that was the first picture I ever took, that's in probably 1966. When I shot that with a black and white.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, market's going down.
Oh, look at that.
So we're talking about time frames. What's your, like, I guess, favorite time frame?
The shorter time frame.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, it's much easier to predict what you guys are going to do for the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually a very good way to put it.
Right? But and then think about if someone's getting what they want, they're completely unpredictable. But if they're not getting what they want.
Do you want to explain the psychology behind that?
Sure, right? If someone's, what's your favorite stock?
My favorite stock? Say Apple.
Okay.
Yeah.
And say you're long Apple from $50 a share.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's now, what is it, 148? I'm somewhere, I haven't looked today, but somewhere in the 150 area.
Mm-hmm.
You're under no pressure to do anything.
Yeah.
Right? So predicting your behavior is impossible.
Mm,
you're probably at the bar.
Yeah, might take profits, might...
Whatever, right? Might you're be, like, oh, you don't have to do anything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I got so much money in this, I don't got to do anything.
Yeah.
Right? But if your partner here, he's long... 10 million shares of Apple from 150,
mm-hmm.
and you know he doesn't have the money, he's on leverage.
Yeah.
Right? And it starts to go bad, it starts to go sellers on him,
mm-hmm.
you think he's got to bail.
Yeah.
Makes him more predictable.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you see a move going against the masses, right, that's when you start to say, okay, we could start to see some fuel to the fire.
Right. Well, how about frame it this way? Why would I be in a rush to take someone else's problem?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you be in a rush to bail someone out of? So let's say they're, you know, you see 10
something,
million.
Yeah, you see something go bad. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, sorry, not my problem.
Yeah.
Right? Just take a deep breath and let the problem on. So when you see something go bad, good trader actually goes with it. Because I know he's got more to go.
Yeah. Okay.
How do you decide? I mean, this is such a specific question, but just generally, kind of as an overall market, from an overall market standpoint, like how do you decide when you're going to get out of a trade?
When a better trade comes along is what Sotomayor says.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting?
I like that.
Yeah. He's like, if you're in a winning trade, but you see a better trade, you get out of that to go for a better trade.
Yeah.
I was like, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's an interesting criteria I never really thought about. But
do you only trade, because you were talking about it, so far I've noticed you trade S&P futures, correct?
S&Ps.
And then do you trade individual securities?
Sure.
And then what is your strategy in like a broad sense, because obviously your strategy is very complex and there's so many different ways you could look at it, but from a very broad perspective, like what do you look for in a stock, let's say if you're going long or going short?
Hawkins says this very well. He says when people are caught off sides,
mm-hmm.
like someone's wrong,
mm-hmm. yeah,
right? That's in a sense we're looking for something to lean against, something certain, right? So what's the most certain things? When someone's wrong and they got to bail.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So okay, so you get somebody off sides at the extremes of a move.
Yep.
Cleanest entry for a trade you'll find. Okay, that doesn't happen every day.
Yeah.
Right, so we have to actually participate in other ways. So if we're talking about how the vertical to horizontal pattern allows us, when the market's trying to get balanced, to use a reversion to the mean. It's super predictable. 85% of the time, that's the way the market trades, and it's safe.
Yeah.
It's not like third biggest move in history like today, right? So there's times when you actually appreciate like predictability and kind of quiet, sort of safe feeling trading.
And the reversion to the mean strategy, is that the right strategy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we already taught,
we went over that in the course.
Yes, we did.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because we talked about how you use VWAP and they're not Bollinger Band. What do you call them?
In my case, I use envelopes.
Yeah, envelopes. Yeah.
Right? And so you can use them on a tick basis or on a percentage basis, on a fib basis, whatever fits, right? Because you're going to move the envelope according to the volatility.
Yeah.
Right? And so that you need to be flexible in regards to the size of the surf.
And we also talked about two moving averages that when they align, that's when the market...
When they go flat.
When they go flat.
35 and...
No, don't say it. Let's save it. That's going to be in the Rumford group. No one's going to know.
Okay.
But what it is when... The idea is to measure balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And so we
There's many ways to do that.
Right. There's many ways to do that. Right. And so the idea is when the market's balanced, we're ready to go vertical.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then we're looking for a market closing off direction. Like today, you could say the big dip and then the big rally.
Yeah. I was going to say, we talked about, for like a visual standpoint, it looks like a tail. Right?
Yes.
So I was actually going to mention that. I was like, okay, I mean, this was
a huge
move and a fat, and it has to do with time, right?
Yeah.
Because if the market moves 200 handles in a month, who cares? But if the market moves 200 handles in
40 minutes.
Like, yeah, exactly. Then, okay, now that's significant.
That's a tail that's equivalent to the low in 2008.
Yeah, and that's price and time.
Yep. So the low in 2008 happened the exact same way. Just like that.
Wow.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. I'd never seen anything like it today. I've never seen anything like today.
Are you nervous?
I'm flat and I'm scared.
Yeah.
It's so rapid.
Yeah. I mean, all the time, it's like people, you know, my family knows I trade and I'm invested in the stock market. They say, oh, okay, where's the market going to go? I'm like, I don't know.
Right?
And
anytime.
Yeah.
Just, you know, anytime ask, just tell people this is a prediction free zone.
Yeah.
Right? We react.
Mm-hmm.
And then we say, I don't know, because you don't know. And nobody knows. But anybody who pretends they know is behind the curve.
Yeah.
Because we're not having to unwind a prediction from our ego perspective.
Like you said, even when you're in a trade, you still don't know.
Right.
How's
it going?
Yeah, exactly. It's how's it going. And it's like taking a step back and, you know, looking at it from a third person perspective, saying, okay, you know, the market can go against me. And when do I know that?
Yeah.
And when do I know that it's going with me?
Right.
So it's not...
How many dates does it take before you trust the other person?
Exactly.
Right?
I like that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, you know, get in the market, want to get involved, think they're going to make money fast, get rich quick, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
Some people do.
And some people do. Right. And beginner's luck is a thing, and I talk about that. But I also think everyone needs to understand, like, there's no secret to the market. It's just understanding, like, the fundamentals, the basis of, you know, how people are interacting, because that's what it is.
It's economics.
Yeah.
Like the market is a function of people making rational decisions about buying and selling. Emotionally, people will sell. The selling part tends to be more emotional. When you go to buy an air conditioner, right, you look in Consumer Reports, right?
Yeah.
You look on sale, right? You
like
wait for the sale. It's as though you're an excellent buyer. We're trained to be unbelievable buyers.
Yeah.
Right? And then, but if you're going to sell it, you got your car and you just bought a new car and you got to sell the old one, you like put an ad on Craigslist, right?
Yeah.
And someone comes and say you want 10,000 and the guy's like, look, I'll give you 7,000. You're like, okay, well, no one comes in 3 weeks. Give me your number. And then it's an emotional decision. One day you just wake up and look out the like that car's still here. You pick up the phone and call the guy. So we're not taught to be good sellers, but we're taught to be incredibly smart buyers.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's the same thing in a marketplace. Like if, let's say, you know, I just bought equity and, you know, I'm like, okay, now all of a sudden I'm taking it for a loss. All of a sudden that price doesn't seem too good now, but in a week, I'm like, okay, shoot, maybe I'll just take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, again, the seller, right? You talked about how someone who's in a good position, they're unpredictable.
Right.
Right. But someone who's in a losing position, they're predictable. They're trying to sell their car. They can't sell it. What are they going to do? They're going to sell it.
Right.
So.
Right. And so, right. But it's an interesting concept to be aware of in regards to trading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So you're asking me about the philosophical aspects of trading.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's, you know, just, there is no quick, everybody wants the answer. Sorry, there is no answer. But in regards to what the courses I assume will be, is that the, you know, there are no black boxes. It's a sense that the markets function from real world principles that we've seen in the on the exchanges that make sense, that you can explain across the table like we're doing here.
Yeah.
And so that's, it's no, there's no secret. It's just that you need someone to explain them.
And you need the right person to explain them. Like, there's people who are great at trading but awful teachers.
Yeah. It, right?
It's, same, I mean, that's everything. For whether it's a sport or a subject in school. And, you know, everyone, a lot of people are good at it, but you, it's all about finding the right teacher.
Okay, well, you guys, listen up.
Yeah.
You're going to have to, you'll have the burden, you know, for the, literally, think about it. There was just hundreds of years of knowledge that you're trying, you'll capture and then put out there for people to learn, which will change people's lives for the better.
Yeah. Right?
Once you learn this skill, no one can take it from you.
Exactly.
It's like being a plumber.
It's like you said, investing in someone in knowledge opposed to condominiums.
Right.
It's like knowledge is so much more valuable than one, you know, one object or one valuable item.
Than anything material.
Exactly. Yeah. Anything material.
Right.
Because knowledge is, you can do anything with knowledge.
Right.
Right.
You know, there's millions of cliches, but yes, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, like you, like for example, like you, let's say you lost all your money. You could go tomorrow, find someone to give you a little bit of money and be trading again. You know what I mean? But let's say you lose that condominium. The condominium's gone.
Right.
And there's no way to get it back.
Right.
Or if a hurricane hits it.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Well, think about what comes with the knowledge. You get a sense of self-confidence.
Yep.
And you get the ability to come back after defeat, right? These are all grit, right? The ability that we can survive through, I've survived, right? So, and my friends who are older than me have survived. And so what we'll instill in you, and when then you will instill in all the other people, is that same ability to survive and thrive. And it's, from what we can gather, people are still going to come to the marketplace no matter what happens.
Yeah. We were talking about the growing interest in trading through social media and how we're kind of at the forefront of, well, being in the social media ourselves, but doing that so we can educate this younger generation.
Yeah.
And like you said, passing the torch, we're teaching this together.
Right.
Yeah.
The three of us.
Yeah.
And I think being able to do that, it's like very rewarding in the way that I think that people are going to then pass that information on. And it's cool to be part of that line.
Well, yeah. I mean,
that generation.
Your friends will appreciate when you help them make money.
Yeah. Yeah. What does every 20-year-old want?
Right.
Yeah.
A Lambo.
True. But it's like so many people, and this is kind of some type of hate we get on social media a lot. It's like, all right, you make money trading. Why do you need to sell a course? Why do you need to,
because that's the biggest market in the world.
Exactly. Education.
Yeah.
I think it's oil, then education. Oil and then education is the second. Yeah,
no, really? Actually, yeah. Wow. I mean, but in a sense, from the trading community, that's the market that needs to be filled.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, there's actually not enough education out there right now.
Right. Certainly, the knowledge is scattered from when the exchange got rid of all the people that were on the floor, and there's no place that it's been dropped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so many people are getting misled because of all this misinformation or just the collection of YouTube videos. Well,
I think it's like Chris said, this is some knowledge that you can possess, and kind of making sports metaphors as we have been. Mm-hmm. It's like you, if you really want to be good at a sport, you know, you can know all this fancy whatnot, right? Like if we're in trading, some like weird, crazy dark pool order flow, like indicator, But if you don't understand the fundamentals, you're never going to make money.
Right.
And a lot, that's what's being taught is like all these like little gimmicks
and indicators
and indicators and things.
Right.
And
black boxes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Everybody wants
like
the answer.
A definite answer, but it's not just an answer. It's very complex in like what trading actually is. You don't realize this until I don't even realize it fully, but just being around people like you, I've kind of started to actually gain this understanding of the marketplace and what trading is as a whole.
I see it in you guys,
yeah.
Which is awesome to see, right? You're starting to realize that there is no answer. Nothing's perfect. It requires a thick skin and the ability to take some risk.
Yeah, it's a cool feeling to have, and I'm excited to transport this into other people,
yeah.
Right? And give them that opportunity because it's like, you know, you can go buy whatever course you want or Google whatever trading strategy that you think will make you a ton of money. But until you actually understand the fundamental characteristics of the market and how it behaves, you're never going to truly be successful.
Or why it does what it does.
Exactly. Why it does what it does.
Right. And so there's very simplistic elements that they don't really teach, unfortunately, that you guys are laying down. So, I mean, it takes work.
Yeah.
It takes work. And the failure rate, remember the failure rate is 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand that the ability to admit you're wrong is what's going to keep you in the game.
Yeah. As the lights go
lights
up,
get out. Are the lights what time are we at? Maybe this is a sign.
Let's see. We're at about 1:03.
Okay. That's actually
perfect
timing.
Pretty perfect so far.
Yeah,
I just kind of wanted to bring in a pretty classic quote that kind of goes along with that. And I saw she just...
Oh, there the lights.
Thank you. Thank you.
This Einstein quote, a person who never made a mistake, never tried anything new. You know, I saw a video that was, a teacher, or maybe it was Einstein, wrote, 9 plus 10, 20 plus 30, blah, blah, blah. And he wrote 10 problems on the board and one of them was wrong. And the whole class laughed at him. But they didn't comprehend. No, they didn't thank him for the 9 problems that were right. They only laughed at him for the one problem that was wrong. So people always focus on the things that you mess up instead of the things that you do good.
Interesting.
So I feel like that kind of goes into it in somewhat of a way.
Yeah, you think
just reminded me of.
You know, think about essentially what's trading requiring you to do is think in ways you've never thought.
Exactly.
It's so twisted.
Yeah.
Like you lose your taste for hallucinogenics.
And trading, it's you versus yourself in a way. It's you versus yourself. That's
we could say it this way: where you choose where to step on the roller coaster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So yes, you have to know yourself, and you know that this is the part of the roller coaster that I like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to touch on a bit of like psychology, just like maybe one tip or two as far as like having
for beginner traders?
For beginner traders, when you're facing a confusing situation, choose curiosity over anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because you hit the fork in the road because you don't know what's going to happen, and then you can choose to be anxious or you can choose to be curious. And so the curious choice is like, hey, you say to yourself, I'm about to learn something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be the first thing. The second is trade very small. Very small. Right? The emotional trauma that accumulates from being a gunslinger is toxic.
Yeah.
Right? Have a reason for what you do.
Yeah.
I like that. And one piece of advice, maybe the most valuable thing you think you
keep your learned. Seat at the table.
Okay.
Keep your seat. Okay. Always keep your seat at the table. You want to be able to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? So that means don't blow up your account.
Definitely not. Do not. Right. You need a long track record of slow positive cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. That's right. Right. Remember, we'll say that again. A long track record of slow positive cash flow.
I like it.
Me too. Well, on that note, I think we've just over an hour.
Yeah, we've gained a slight background.
Lights are turning off. Yeah, they're going to walk us inside the building.
No, it's open.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think
so. Thank you very much. And tomorrow we have a great day.
Thank you,
Chris.
Yeah, great
Chris,
day.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
we'll this definitely. Awesome. I'm excited for tomorrow. Everyone stay tuned.
This is actually going live tomorrow at 3 p.m. So
this
it's kind of out
that's
of perfect
great.
Time. Oh, okay. I realized we didn't pre-record an episode for this week. So
okay, that's awesome.
This is that episode.
There okay, we go.
So yeah. They have been. You have been now.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, Chris Cady's part of the Rumford Group and one of the, he's going to, be one of the first teachers, professors, mentors, whatever you want to call it, part of this thing. So, I mean, we've been talking a lot about this, and it's really all coming into fruition.
Isn't it great?
Yeah. It's really cool.
It's great.
It's really, really cool.
So, well, thank you, Perry.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for watching. All right. We'll see you guys in the next episode.
Peace.
Bye.